Gigapod is a podcast where we interview companies building exciting and economically sustainable business models in the gig, circular, and sharing economies. Make sure to subscribe, and to find out more, go to gigapay.co/gigapod. Welcome to Gigapod. So today we're joined by ShareTribe's Sjoerd Handgraff, where he is the CMO. Welcome, Sjoerd. How are you?
Very good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about yourself. You've been involved in a lot of entrepreneurial ventures. So besides ShareTribe, which one really sticks out to you in your career?
So about myself. So originally, I'm actually from the Netherlands, originally trained as an English teacher and cultural analyst, so like a liberal arts major. But I moved to Finland because I'm married to a Finnish woman. At the time, we weren't married. But when I moved here, I realized that, wow, my diplomas are absolutely worthless here in Finland because the education system here is like so much better than in the Netherlands, where anyone with basically a master's degree can become a teacher, which was sort of my plan at the time. So then when I came here, I realized I needed a different plan. And then because of the way that kind of is, I ended up with a startup. And actually, I think that's also the one you ask, like, which one sort of sticks out. I think that's my first one is the one that sticks out because I'd never worked in a startup before. So my first company where I worked was called Moogo. It was an online website builder. So kind of like a no-code website builder. It was made by a Finnish company, which had sort of like a domestic version of that already really successful. And they thought, well, we could probably do this internationally. And so I was hired there. And it just showed me like lots of things about the startup. Like that, you know, like, first of all, that the world is a huge place. Like that once you go into online business, you realize that there's like markets everywhere, that things are possible to do things really, really fast, like both in terms of like building a product, but also in terms of changing the organization, changing a career. So I think we grew really fast with that company. Like we doubled in the time that I was there in terms of headcount. And it also showed me that like if you take in a startup, like if you are ambitious and if you take initiative, you can really move ahead and get things done. So I think that was really the one that stuck out for me.
So how was that? I'm quite curious because, you know, when you start out your career or your education, really, you have this one idea of how your life is going to be. And then for you sort of having this dream of being an educator and then working in a startup, how was that transition? Like what part of it really resonated with you? Or I guess because you've really committed your career down this path now.
Well, yeah, I think that like, I mean, it's a really good question, actually. I think about that a lot about, you know, now I have now three kids and I think about like how they're going to live their life. And like, you know, was there anything that I would have liked to know when I went to university, for example? I wasn't much of a planner to begin with. So I was more like a kind of like a let's see what happens kind of person. So, I mean, so I didn't really have the dream to become an educator. It was more like, well, that's a pretty good backup plan. Like if I don't really find anything else, like it's a noble profession. I had really good experience with my own teachers. I could totally see myself being a teacher. And I think I still see that might happen at one point or another. Now I kind of come from like another thing that sort of comes into play is that I have this like background in music, especially like punk music, underground music. And I realized sort of like when looking back that I had some kind of like entrepreneurial drive already. Like I started a small label where we brought out cassette demos. And I, with another friend, we made this like video magazine, like where we recorded concerts and montaged them and sold them to other fans and stuff. So I think it wasn't like, in hindsight, okay, there was some kind of entrepreneurial drive that probably would have started to itch if I would have gone on a career in education. Yeah, so for me, it's been kind of a natural sort of flow of things. And I think that now, for example, in the work that I do at ShareTribe, so we do a lot of kind of educational work, like trying to dissect how marketplaces work and how can we teach that the best to our customers and stuff. So it's not entirely lost. I think it's a nice sort of like matchup. And I think also another thing about the sort of this punk background, this DIY background, I think that's precisely the kind of thing that you need in startups, like question everything. Think that you can do things better yourself, like those kind of things, that like all of that sort of nicely comes together in a startup.
That's great. And with talking about the ShareTribe, why don't you tell us a little bit about the origin story? So who the founders are, how did it all begin and everything like that?
So ShareTribe was founded already. Actually, we're kind of a really old company. So the two founders, Antti and Juho, they were studying together at the university here in Helsinki. And they both became part of this research group, sort of, I think, after the master's or during the master's, where the objective was to build a more sustainable campus. And so what came out of that was this sharing platform for the local university where students could, you know, exchange and share and borrow things, you know, like, you know, I don't know, I always give the example that like, hey, I'm having a party. Does anybody have a smoke machine? Yeah, I have a smoke machine. Can I borrow it? Or like a drill, you know, like those kind of things. Mm-hmm. And then, so that was kind of a big success. And I think actually like a form of the platform is still in use at the Helsinki University. But then when the research program ended and the funding ended, they thought like, hey, we really kind of like this. How about we try to sell this to other universities? And so they found out sort of over, let's say, 1 or 2 years that it's actually really difficult to do do business with universities or those kind of huge institutions if you're trying to get a business off the ground, because like the sales cycle is huge, all kind of custom demands and stuff. But then as they sort of got deeper and deeper into this like sharing economy, they met a lot of other sharing economy entrepreneurs who all sort of had the same problem, which is like, hey, I have a great idea, but how do I build a platform? And they had basically built a platform more than once. And so then it's when they realized that, hey, you know, like this could be a business, like just providing platforms to people with great sharing economy ideas. And then that's kind of like, that has been the business since. I think that's maybe that shift was around like 2012 or something. Okay. And then basically since 2014, we've been having this like fully self-service Squarespace-like, WordPress-like online marketplace builder where you just sign in online, log in online, and the whole thing happens, lives, breathes, works online. And
yeah,
so,
that's fantastic.
Yeah.
And, yeah. So whereabouts did you get involved in the story with Antti and your host? Like, how did you guys meet?
So I've been with ShareTribe now over 4 years, which is coming back to my career path. That's the longest I've been in any kind of company. And actually, we've met through a very sort of like through mutual, what's the word? Mutual, well, not a friend, but
contact.
Someone. Yeah, yeah, mutual contact. Yeah, thanks. Mutual contact who I had actually been working with and maybe was going to work with that person who then gave me a tip that like, hey, they're about to look for a marketing lead. And I just come from this company called Musician, which is a music education app. And I was looking for something a little bit like in the same kind of field or in terms of like marketing. And then he put me on this path. And basically we met a couple of times and I think it clicked really well because they're both like kind of special people. Like our ShareTribe, and I think we can talk a little bit about that maybe. We're not a normal kind of company. Like we are not one of those.
What
growth.
Does that mean?
Yeah. So yeah, that's a good question. Actually, it's a silly way to say it, but we're not a growth at all costs startup. We are really about building a sustainable business, sustainable in terms of the economics. So we're really trying to be profitable. We always try to make sustainable growth channels. So not that you're paying like 10 times and you're only getting back half of the time, like some other companies, but also in terms of the people, the way the organization is organized. So I think rarely has any of the founders worked more than 40 hours per week, on very rare occasions only. We really try to get that sort of like, you know, work above everything. Like we really try to get this like work-life balance in order. And I think I've worked with a couple of startups and I think this is the one that has truly achieved that the best. So we have some really, cool, I don't know how deep we can go into this, but we have some really cool things. Like, for example, we have a Friday smileys where you get to say about how your week has been and you're free to sort of include also personal things because it's just impossible to keep the personal things out of the office. So it's better to sort of like create a regular interval where you can like share those things because they're going to affect you. Like we can all pretend that it doesn't, but you know, we're recording this now while my kid's downstairs because his holiday's over, or like, if we would have recorded this a couple of weeks ago, I would have 3 kids downstairs because of the whole COVID lockdown. And so life and work just really, really always intermingles. And I try to keep a really healthy balance into doing that. Mm. Maybe even at times, I sometimes feel that maybe we're even too much on the balance towards life than at work. But that's just because I come from some startups where that was quite the opposite. So
I understand that. And how many people are you at ShareTribe today?
We're about 20. People. I would weird to say about, but we just recently hired someone and I'm not entirely sure if we're like 19 or 20, but something like 20.
Okay, cool. And I think this is good since we're sort of on the topic. When we spoke before we started recording the podcast, you shared that you moved from being a VC-backed company to a steward ownership structure. Can you tell us a little bit about the journey from that and why you guys made that decision and also how it's impacted the business?
Yeah. So, okay, this is going to be a long answer because this is really nicely like tied into sort of everything we do. So I'm not even sure whether we fully established what ShareTribe does, but ShareTribe basically, it is our mission to democratize the sharing economy. In practice, that means that we build marketplace software and we educate people on marketplace businesses. So like our mission is to democratize the sharing economy. And basically it comes down to like three parts. So if you now want to start an online marketplace, there are like three blockers to starting a business. And two of them are very closely related. So first of all, like I already mentioned in the when we went into the history, like there's the technological threshold. Like you need to build a platform. So you either need to code yourself or you need to hire a coder or buy a service from someone. And so if that technological threshold is high, then it automatically creates a like financial threshold. Because if you're not a coder yourself, you need to hire someone. Where do you get the money, et cetera? And so there's the technological threshold and the financial threshold. And then the third one we kind of feel is this knowledge threshold. So, you know, you can get the platform, get the money, but how do you run a business like that? And we are sort of like on a day-to-day basis, that's what we're doing. Like we're just trying to make it easier and easier to build an online platform really fast to get a marketplace out there. Now, this is tightly related to our mission because if you think about the sharing economy, like the last, let's say, decade, like let's say, I think the word turned up first time like 2011 or something, or that it sort of gotten into use. And like since then, we've seen a couple of like big global players, Airbnb, Uber, some other ones that have really taken up a huge space in this particular economy. And I don't think all of them sort of necessarily deserves to have the word like share in their business description. You know, there's all these things about how workers get exploited, et cetera. Neighborhoods get just Airbnb'd up. Like people can't afford to live in neighborhoods where they used to live because people are buying up these things or these kind of places. So we kind of feel that the sharing economy has been like stolen from us, and we're sort of on a mission to bring that back. And with things like Airbnb and Uber, like one of the main reasons why that's happening is just because those other thresholds, like we said earlier, they are so high that the only way to sort of build that kind of platform previously was just through venture capital, because you need to invest a lot upfront into the platform. And the only way, you know, the most common way of getting that kind of funding is venture capital. And then in return, venture capital wants to have an exit and you really to take over the world and want to increase the return on the initial investment as much as they can. And that's just sort of is at odds sometimes if you are a mission-driven company. And so our favorite example always is like Etsy. So Etsy is a marketplace for crafted goods, or used to be a marketplace for crafted goods. They had a big ideological thing to sort of be like the anti-Amazon or the anti-eBay, like, but just like custom-made special artisan things where like small like artists or handy people could have their own little business. And they went on this like VC round after round after round until they have sort of batched up so much like venture capital that at some point those people of course wanted to see their money back, which is their right. That basically created a situation where Etsy was sort of forced to sell out their mission in order to just become better at being a profitable company and a commercial company. And so we feel that that's kind of at odds. And we felt a similar thing coming up with our mission and our situation. So we got some initial VC funding. But then around like 2018, I think end of 2017, we got into a situation where, well, we're still not profitable. The end of the runway was in sight. How would we raise more capital? Juho and Antti are just super passionate about ShareDrive and this mission. And so they're not actually looking for an exit. And they just decided that they don't want to commit to a similar path like that. And then we came across this thing called steward ownership. And that's the kind of company where we are now, where basically only the structure is so that only people who work with ShareDrive have shares with voting rights. So you can still become an investor, but you will have nothing to say about the path of the company. And on top of that, also the returns are capped at a certain like pre-agreed share buyback price. Now we're getting a little bit too technical, but basically in practice, it means that no, you cannot get unlimited profit out of your initial investment. The majority of the profit will be invested back into the business. And as an investor, you have no say in the like ideological mission of the company, nor in the practical mission. So we as a company, we employees, we determine where this is going. And that, of course, it doesn't work for every company, but for us, it works really, really well. And it also goes really, really well with our mission, which is this democratization. Because, you know, you can imagine a situation where we would be in a situation where we could scale our software so that it becomes basically free to build an online marketplace. And that would be a very difficult discussion to have with investors if you are all about maximizing profits. But yeah, if we feel that we can be like, we could give this out for free, still remain like a profitable company, but sort of minimizing the profit so that we just cover the cost, for example, if that's our ideological choice, that we are now at liberty to do so. And that really, so our mission and our sort of financial situation should never be at odds. And I think that's a really, I think that's a really nice ideal.
Mm. Yeah, of course. And I think that's something that a lot of startups struggle with, especially when they take in VC money, that you have this conflict perhaps from what you thought that it was that you were starting out and what the company ends up evolving to. And of course, it's not for everyone. So it's fantastic to see that you guys have found a way how to make it work for you. And I would also say be successful at the same time, because like I mentioned to you before, Shawad, is that I learned about Shared Tribe because I was participating in a Hack the Crisis here in Stockholm. And I was recommended Shared Tribe. And then a couple of weeks later, another colleague told me, oh, have you seen Shared Tribe? And you guys are obviously doing something that's really needed from the market. And people really appreciate how easy it is to get everything up and running. So yeah, I think it's only great. When you talk a little bit about the sharing economy, you kind of touched a little bit upon how the evolution that you've seen from like Uber, Airbnb, Etsy, sort of the, I guess you'd say like more of the, what we could even say incumbents are today within the whole sort of space. How do you see that moving in the next 5 to 10 years? Or what sort of sharing economy type businesses do you see evolving or coming out of our space?
Yeah, great question. It's the future is always challenging to answer, and especially now when like things are moving, it seems at least to me like the last whatever 3 to 4 months, just like my future image of the future has radically changed. However, I think that I don't mean to say when we talked about Airbnb and Uber and the incumbents, like there isn't, it's not that there isn't a place for them. Like there's definitely a place for them. But I think that some of those, they have no reason to sort of like globally dominate. And I think we're already seeing in a couple of places where you can see that like certain workers just sort of take their own, you know, people who have been marginalized, they're able to start their own platform, make their own rules. And we've seen it a couple of times. There's a whole movement about this called like platform cooperatives, which is basically that. So people unite in a cooperative and then put money together and then build their own platform. So for example, there is like sort of a local, I think it's in Austin, I think it's Share Austin or something. It's like a local Uber run by drivers. There is a similar one for cleaning in a couple of major big cities in the US. I should have looked up these names actually, but I don't remember. But those kind of things. And I think that's kind of the future that we are betting on. So we see a future where, yeah, you can have the global giants. And for some, it makes a lot of sense. Like, for example, Airbnb, it makes sense because you travel all over the world from one place. So it would be very challenging to figure out for each location, like what is the local Airbnb. But lots of those also, there is no reason to be run out of Silicon Valley or out of some other like main headquarters. And so we see a future where you have those giants, but you also have these like decentralized local platforms owned by the community. And that's kind of what I expect. And then I think that's what we're betting on heavily with Charter, but there's that kind of need. And that, of course, goes nicely into play with what we're doing, because those kind of communities, they don't have, you know, 100,000 million euros to invest in a platform beforehand. So.
Exactly. And I think in the same way, they're not their core ambition when they start out building their platform business isn't, okay, we want to learn how to code the best marketplace site. It's more like they see it more as an enabler or a tool for them to sort of become successful within the vertical which they want to focus on.
At least that's
the way that I imagine it.
Yeah, absolutely. It should be a tool.
So if we just go back to your journey, and you've spoken a little bit about it already, but this during the last 9 years, and I know that you guys had this huge pivot earlier on. Well, how do you really see that how have you seen the competitive landscape change? And what do you think as a business, what do you think the biggest challenges that you faced have been besides the ones that you've already mentioned?
Yeah. So, well, like I said, I wasn't there 9 years ago, of course, but I learned a lot about what had happened at the time. And I think that 9 years ago, we were definitely one of the first, maybe even the first, to have this like no code approach, or this like, yeah, this is just a tool. This should be as easy as possible. Over time, of course, we've seen competition increase, which basically it's great because it validates that the bet we are making on that market is like the market exists. It's good that other people are also putting time, money, and effort into this because you're still making a big bet as a startup. There's only that much you can research beforehand. And so when you look at this problem of like building an online marketplace, there are many different approaches also among the competition. And I don't think there is a silver bullet right now, and probably there won't ever be like a sort of like one size fits all solution. And because so much of it depends on your own skill set, your budget, your timeline, et cetera. So we're always sort of happy with competition because it's just confirmation that we're at least going into a direction where stuff is still moving. And we also learn a lot what other people are doing. And I think there's a place for a couple of these kind of approaches. In terms of like biggest challenge, your second question, we're a subscription business. So you pay ShareTribe a monthly fee, starting from quite low to quite a lot, depending on the size of your marketplace. And so with any subscription business, churn is the challenge. And in our case, maybe even more than most subscription businesses, because we deal with startups, new companies, very small companies. And, you know, I always quote like 9 out of 10, but it's probably a much more brutal number, more like 99 out of 100 startups fail. So that is sort of part of this like natural churn when you work with these kind of companies. And that's also great. Like that's another great thing about ShareTribe, I think, is that I try not to make this sound too much like a commercial, but I think what's the nice thing about ShareTribe is in those cases as well, that you've tried out your idea, you know, you have this idea, you tried it out, it fails, fine. Like you only have lost like a couple of hundred thousand euros, not more. You know, you didn't spend a year of your life coding and then to find out that nobody wants this. But so we always have that sort of churn. But the problem that we had with ShareTribe that we realized a couple of years ago is that we also have this churn on the other side. So that means that people who actually are successful with the platform, who have their initial business idea validated, who are growing and seeing great success, they started to reach the ceiling of the platform. Because of course, if you have this like platform approach, you can't build every single feature. Like we try to have core things that cover as many use cases as possible. But we ran into cases where even people who are successful, they're like, oh, I just need this one feature. You don't have it, so I need to move away. And of course, that's not a great situation. Like we called it like the graduation problem. And so that was basically our biggest challenge to grow. I mean, you can imagine at some months we had like double-digit churn, which is like unsustainable for any kind of software company. So then we built this second product, which is called ShareTribe Flex, which is not a no-code product, but you need to actually have I need to know some coding to get it up and running. And that was a huge bet because we put like a significant amount of our dev resources to building an entirely new product from scratch, entirely new thesis, entirely new code base, everything. And that has luckily worked out really well. So that is for teams who have technological knowledge on board, you know, like a team of a coder or something. We work a lot with incubators who use that for their teams, which is kind of still super fast and comparatively super cheap to get started, but it never gets in your way. So it's more like a marketplace backend as a service where, you know, Flex takes care of the user management transactions, all of the marketplace basics. And the thing that you need to build on top is the whole user experience. So whether that is a website or an app or both, or it integrates with your existing system. But we just take care of the marketplace component. And that has been luckily very successful bets. That product is going really well. And so we have some really big customers on there.
So do you have any that you want to mention?
Well, we have like, for example, Canon Australia, I should mention. They've used it to build their own camera equipment rental marketplace. So if you own camera, if you own Canon camerawear in Australia, you can put it on there. Platform and other people can rent it from you, which of course kind of an interesting approach for a company that's basically making and selling camera material. But for them, it works out really well. And so they were able to, instead of doing a whole lot of in-house development, like use Flex to build something really, really fast. And then right now, actually just one that came into my mind because the season is starting again here in Europe, that we have a French company called Swimmy, who is sort of an Airbnb for private swimming pools. So if you live in France or in Spain, I think they're now as well. If you have a backyard pool, you can rent it out. And I mean, they have been growing like so incredibly fast that I really like to always reference that customer because everybody can sort of imagine that, like, yeah, I would love that. So,
yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. So I see you have your flex on one side to deal with the sort of churn on for the customers that were graduating past your service. Correct. And then I also know you have the academy, which I guess enables the earlier startups or the ones that are testing the idea. You give them the resources so that they can be better equipped with growing their business as well. I really love your academy and also the library that you've made, which I'm going to link to in this episode. Is there, like, what is your, like, how long has the academy been, have you been working on it for? And like, what's your greatest success story, I guess, with the content when it comes to the academy side?
Yeah, so the academy is basically, I think I mentioned this also with when we came to like the challenges when you build a platform. So one of the things that we're trying to like lower the threshold is this like business knowledge, because building a marketplace business is not like building any other kind of business. Basically, you're building like two kinds of businesses because you have both sides of the platform. You're building a business for supply on the one side and demand on the other side. And there are lots of kind of like special things about a marketplace business that you will be difficult even for more experienced startup people to fully appreciate. And so for us, it's not just for people like early teams. It's also for, you know, we get a lot of enterprise leads through there, like people who, because we started this already, I think like 2015 or something. So I don't even dare to calculate how much time we put into this. But it's been really, really great for getting attention, also for learning ourselves, for getting leads, and for getting, like, I'm super happy to hear what you mentioned, that people have been recommending ShareTrap to you, because no doubt that's in no small way, like, thanks to the academy as a whole. So what we put there is like very practical advice. So we've written a guide there. We even written a book, which you can find on Amazon, which is like a very practical guide to building an online marketplace. But we also, on the academy, you get interviews with people who have been building marketplaces, successful marketplace entrepreneurs, investors. And actually right now, like today, if I can do a small pitch, like while we're recording this, we're also releasing a podcast called Two Sided, which is a podcast series where basically I interview marketplace entrepreneurs of the like who are a little bit further stage scale ups and et cetera, and try to figure out how did they build it? What problems did they see? How did they solve the chicken and egg problem? How did they, I don't know, actually chicken and egg problem. So that's the chicken and egg problem with marketplaces, is that do you first get your buyers on board or your suppliers? So for example, if you think about Airbnb, like, do you first get the apartments on board, or do you try to find customers already? That's a very challenging problem within the marketplace space. So in the podcast, I interview people about that, learn what was their first version of the product, how did they validate it, what challenge did they see, et cetera. And all of that basically so that we can sort of enable our customers to, you know, get that information, because it's not so easily available. It's a special type of business and nobody really knows except for people who have done it before.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm really looking forward to when that podcast comes out. So I'm definitely going to be linking to that in this episode too. And just because now you've interviewed a lot of successful businesses and you have the marketplace, plus you also the academy, plus you also have all of this experience. So maybe you can just share with us your top three tips. It's the last question that I have for you now.
Yeah.
So for running a marketplace business.
That's a great question. I'll try to like quickly condense a couple of hours of interviews in my head. I think that the one thing, like if I can just give one tip, like let's just do the biggest one that is that comes back again and again and again and again, even from people who have before starting our marketplace, like super good business education, whatever experience, like one thing that they either learn the hard way or because someone tells them, is that you need to constrain your marketplace. If you have a marketplace idea, try to make it as small as possible in terms of like whether you do it in a particular city or a particular neighborhood, or if you do it in terms of like categories. So let's say, for example, that you do some like professional services, focus on one particular service first. So if you think about, for example, beauty services. So if you want to start a marketplace for beauty services, don't start a global one for all beauty services, but instead, you know, start one in Stockholm and only for hairdressers for women, so that you can very easily narrow in on one side of the market, like what are your customers, and also very narrowly focus on your supply side, like who are going to be booked there. And because what's the most important thing in a marketplace is this thing called liquidity. That means that if someone comes to your marketplace to find something, they will find it. And if someone comes to your marketplace to offer something, then it will get sold or rented. If those two things are out of balance, your marketplace is just broken because you can't make transactions happen. And the best way to make transactions happen is to just make as much of that sort of matching already beforehand, you know, so by narrowing down the location or the service. Did that make sense?
Because I love that. Yeah,
because that is like something that everybody that's telling me comes like with one or two exceptions, but everybody says that, yeah, that was the biggest thing we learned. We went too big. We went too broad. We went too wide. We went like, and then you just, nothing's happening on your marketplace. You don't learn anything. Like you just get a lot of noise. So yeah, that is the number one thing. Like don't try to conquer the world. Like try to conquer your neighborhood first or something like that.
Yeah. I think that's great. And it makes a lot of sense too. It's probably something that a lot of ambitious people find out the hard way anyway.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I was just thinking, because there was one last question that I forgot to ask, and that was just more about the COVID-19 and the types or the composition of the new marketplaces that you have on coming into Share Tribe. Do you see that having changed in any way in the last couple of months?
Yeah, for us, like for some of our customers, it has been really tough. You can imagine that there's a couple of marketplace types that need like physical interaction that has just been, you know, like from one day to the next, that just completely died out. And that's been, I mean, it's very hard to see. If you see people, like we've seen teams, because we work quite closely with most of the teams, especially on the Flex product, because there's a lot of still back and forth. And it's like, it's tough to see like ambitious people who have put in a lot of time just like get wiped out because of something like this. On the other hand, there are also, I've also seen loads of people for who this has been suddenly a really great thing. Like, especially if you think about like people who offer online services, like online education, online coaching, those kind of things, they have really, really, really taken off. And I think that like, basically like in this time, like I think there's loads of things that marketplaces can do that other types cannot. Like for example, I'd like to give a shout out to, it's not even our customer, but this North American company called Rockify, which is kind of like, they call themselves the marketplace for everything, which goes completely opposite to what I've just been saying. But what they have been doing, for example, what I just found out like last week or something. So they have basically turned around like a whole part of their business around becoming more like a supplier. So where previously they were about like renting like individuals to individuals, they've gone out, for example, to gyms who have like stuff, material, you know, gym machines and those kind of things just stay idle. And just ask them, hey, you know, we can put it on our platform for you and we'll deliver it. So, you know, we saw this great service, this woman who owned a gym who was like first couple of weeks maybe of the COVID crisis had no idea what to do. And then through that platform was actually to rent out, you know, fitness machines, whatever, spinning bikes. And then the marketplace in question, Rockify, they just took care of like the matching and the delivery and stuff. And they took a small fee. And I think that's like, that's brilliant. You know, like if you can sort of change your business around like that.
That's so smart. While you're saying that, I'm looking at my elliptical that I bought, the elliptical machine, you know, the cross trainer.
Yeah, yeah.
It's in the corner of the room. And I actually canceled my gym membership because of COVID. And now I'm like, okay, I'm going to buy some gym equipment instead because it's like, yeah. So I mean, I can totally see the point of from a gym perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, can I say one more thing? I don't know if we have time, but actually something I completely forgot to mention. So, and it's a little bit self-promotional, but it's also just to illustrate like the creativity of people, which has been super, super inspiring. So when this COVID hit like in Europe, in Italy, for example, really heavy first, and we saw lots of people from there opening ShareDrive accounts, which obvious like good intentions. For example, there was one person who was like, hey, I just want to use your marketplace to indicate which stores are open, or I want to use your marketplace to for everybody to sort of list what they have in the house that is extra so that other people in my community can find it. And so when we saw that, we did this sort of promotional offer that anyone with an obvious nonprofit purpose related to the COVID thing, COVID thing, that's a super understatement, to this pandemic, could get a sort of like temporary free plan just for the duration of like how long they would need it. And we've seen like super creative ideas, like people, for example, who previously had a marketplace for creative people, just made a marketplace for like hiring creative people. And so for like home lessons and those kind of things. And other people who did like, well, already did what we said, like the leftover supply, also other people for like looking after kids, you know, any kind of like, yeah, in these kind of like times, a marketplace can be like super helpful in bringing these parties together, because that's basically what they do, like bringing some, like people who need something and people who have something together. And I think in a pandemic like this, there's loads of those situations. We've seen like super, super cool things come out of that. So that's I'm quite incredible. Optimistic about that. Yeah.
Yeah. I love all of that stuff and the community, the power of the community, and also that you guys are enabling that. So yeah, congratulations. That's all I can really say. Let's leave it at that, Sjoerd. I so much appreciate your time and just learning everything from you and from ShareTribe. I wish we had even more time, but I'm going to definitely link to your podcast, also the resources that you've created too. And yeah, thank you again.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was fantastic. Like, I mean, I think we have a nice thing to say, so it's always nice to have to say that.
Yes, so. Perfect. All right then, take care.
Thanks, you too.
Make sure to subscribe, and to find out more, go to gigapay.co/gigapod.